What's going on, squad? Welcome back to another episode of Ball Out. In this episode, me and Miles are going to be covering our first episode of our muscle series. Our muscle series is going to be a combination of muscles that we feel are important and exercises that we think you guys should be doing that are going to be transferring over to dodgeball specifically. So check out the episode. Let us know what you guys think. Enjoy. I got a funny story before we get into this muscle series and ab stuff.
Oh, that part I heard. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess we'll just jump in here. So me and Sage were doing some spring cleaning type stuff. And she's going through, like, I guess it would be like our bathroom pantry / hallway closet that has all like ibuprofen and all that kind of stuff in it. And she was up on the top shelf and found a thing of like at home waxing, and she pulled it out and she wondered if it was still good. So she checked it out, and then she was heating it up in the microwave, and I thought it'd be funny to witness this. So I'm already laughing in my head, like, this is going to be hilarious. She's not going to realize how much pain this is going to cause her, and it's going to be a good day for me. So so she spread it on her leg, and she does the first one, and oh, it's not that bad. I don't, like, oh man, that's a little bit of a letdown. Then try two, goes for it, and oh, that one hurts a little bit more. I was like, man, this is such a letdown. Why, this is supposed to be painful, and you are supposed to be like, I'm supposed to be laughing at your pain right now. So she gets a little confident and hesitates, and there comes the pain. And that's when I started dying laughing. And she's like, the directions even said that this was probably going to happen. And so long story short, I decided, you know what, I'll give it a try. So she puts it on my chest, and she took it like a champ, so I figured, you know, I'll just see what it feels like. And so the first time she does it, that's not bad. It's like the middle of my chest, like right off my sternum. And then she goes over by the nipple, and it hurts so bad. I thought once she was going to punch me in the face when she was ripping it off. So I made her go the other way, and that's like going with the follicle, so it didn't pull anything out. So then she had to do it again with like the hardened wax, and it hurt so bad. I was not a fan.
Dude, like, I'm sweating and listening to that. That does not sound fun. I would have figured, like, me personally, I'm like, go with the calf and like how much, see how much that hurts, and then go for the chest. So that way I can like gauge how much pain I'll be in. But I would never start with the chest. That's bold.
I figured worst case scenario, you know, if I have a patch in my chest, not a big deal. I mean, who knows what the coronavirus is going to let us have for a summer. But if I, you know, I'm never not in shorts. I hate wearing pants.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just feel like so constricting, and I can't run away whenever possible. But, yeah, I figured, you know, I'd go with the chest, worst case, and I'll cover it up. And, so now I have like half of a wax chest. And it's still like feeling it with my hand, it's still warm, like through my shirt.
I'm sure it is.
But anyway, I just wanted to tell that fun story because this is what the coronavirus has me doing with us all inside and doing nothing.
Right. What we do for entertainment.
Yeah. But so this episode is going to be our first episode of our muscle series, which will be kind of breaking down different muscle groups of the body and talking about their kind of like their functionality, training them a little bit, and then what will really translate best into dodgeball. So I guess we'll just start with, did I already say we're starting with the abs? If not, nope. We're starting with the abs.
Yeah, we're starting with abs.
Well, we'll start with abs because I feel that they're one of the most important for functionality, and I think that they are a hot button muscle group that everyone, you know, wants well-defined abs. Everybody would love a six pack, and we're going to just kind of dance along see what happens.
Sounds like a plan, man. Like, I definitely think that abs are underrated, underutilized, like, between, at least compared to the rest of the body, is definitely underrated and underutilized properly between most, I would say most athletes that have a general understanding of how the human body works.
Do you think they do have a understanding of how they work?
Well, because, I mean, when you think about it, like, again, like you said, a lot of people want the six-pack abs. A lot of people want kind of like that whole physique look. So most people that I talk to, at least whether it's athletes or just kind of the general person, like day-to-day person that just wants to look healthier, abs typically is their first go-to. Like, hey, I want six-pack abs. I want to look good. I want to have like that summer bod. But typically that's mostly linked to physique, but not really looking to be productive with abs, like if you think of it that way. So
yeah, so you're talking everybody wants the aesthetics of them, not necessarily the function.
That's what the word I was going for was, but I could not think of the word. I'm like, I think internal, intrinsic. I'm like, that's not it. But yeah, the aesthetic, everyone's thinking about the aesthetic look versus functionality, and there's going to be a really interesting relationship between the two as we go on.
Yeah, and I think the aesthetic is, because they're so difficult to obtain, that's why, you know, people that have a well-defined, you know, like six-pack or something is so, I guess, sought after, because it is something that's very difficult to do, and it takes a lot of discipline to, one, you know, it takes a lot of grinding to build your abs up enough to be seen, and then to actually be lean enough so that they can pop is also a very daunting task. So let's talk about how abs can affect dodgeball play, and then we'll get into exercise and stuff later.
Okay. So the best way that one of my old coaches explained how, I'm just gonna say core, because focusing on just the abs ignored everything else. So I would say core as a whole. If you can think of, I'm terrible at explaining, I don't remember how he worded it, but like the core is a great way to transfer energy coming from the lower body to the upper body, and vice versa, depending on the situation. Like, if you have, like, let's say you have jello instead of your core. I don't know, it's just a really bad metaphor, but just follow me with it.
Okay.
So imagine your abs are jello, and you try to jump. All that energy that transfers from your legs is going to get lost in the jello, because jello is not exactly a conductor. It doesn't really pass along anything. Like, you hit jello, all that's going to do is just wiggle in between. Now, if you have a strong rock solid core, like imagine like a metal pole, like your spine, except if it's a strong stick. If you transfer the load from your legs to your upper body, it's going to go directly to your upper body. It's going to be quick as possible. So that's like kind of the analogy that my coach broke it down to me with, kind of like imagery, where if you have a good energy transfer with your core, that's how you know you have a productive core and able to be productive and functional in your movements. So that's a great way to have it translate onto the court.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense, because I mean that's part of what I wanted to get into about how, you know, the abs protect the spine and how, you know, they help you actually stay upright, and that nailed it. If you don't have a strong core, you know, moving your back around would be all basically on your spine and some, I guess, some deeper muscles. So if you don't have that nice, strong, tight core, it makes it really easy for your back to get injured. And with a lot of the weird dynamic and, you know, funny positions you find yourself in playing dodgeball, you really want to protect your spine and be able to recover out of those positions and come back to a balance. And I think that's where I think we should start, is how your core affects your balance, and how playing, you know, that balance is something you're going to lean on a lot.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of it has to do with the movements of each. Like, if you think of abs as a whole, a lot of people think just those six pack abs, the abdominis rectus, I think I'm saying that right. But a lot of people are focused on those six pack abs that everyone thinks of. But when you think about core and abdominals, it's pretty much everything from, if you think below the nipple level or the pectoral muscles, pretty much everything down to about your pelvis. So everything interlocking between the ribs, everything in the deep muscle tissue that support your spine, support your your sternum, all those muscles in that area are technically part of your core. So that's your obliques, that's your rectus abdominis, those are your transverse abdominis, your lower back muscles, everything within that core section. So those are all muscles that are interlocked and work together in order to do the basic movements that we're able to do. So if you think of it as planes of movement, the frontal, the sagittal, and the transverse movement, which is twisting movements, those, if you train your core, they allow your body to have more options in terms of movement, and that'll translate into balance.
Yeah, that's if you break down balance, it can be broken down into three different parts. One obviously is your visual, so what you see, and that's why actually a lot of people get things like seasick, because when you're looking on a boat and you kind of like look out into the horizon, it looks like you're standing still. But when your body feels that movement, it confuses your brain, and that's why you get seasick. The second part is, and I might butcher how you say this, but it's vesicular. I don't know, but that's it's.
Explain it, and I might know name. I might know a different name for it.
It's basically your inner ear. So your inner ear is that level that you have in your body. You know, if somebody stands up, gets dizzy too fast, or if you know somebody that has inner ear issues, they have a lot of balance issues. And then the third is your proprioception.
Oh, vestibular. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. So the third one there is the important one that we want to talk about. That's just knowing where your body's at in space and having your core tight, and I don't want to say loose enough, but having the mobility really to recover out of those weird positions is going to take a lot of work to find, I guess, where the end of that range is, and a lot of strengthening to be able to recover out of those positions. The three sections of the core, like you said, your abs, your obliques, and your TVA, which is the transverse abdominals, they all train, I guess, differently, and are cause for different things in the body. Like your TVA is really like your internal weight belt, is how I've always been explained, and it holds everything together. So if you have an atrophied transverse abdominals, your gut's gonna looks like it sits a little bit lower. You know, it everything's not up and tight, and that leaves you exposed to like back injuries and stuff. And then you have your rectus abdominals, which are, you know, the quote unquote six pack that bring your rib cage down to your waistline, and then your obliques, which are your twisting. And each one of those is very important, especially in dodgeball. And I think we should talk about training those, one for aesthetics, because I know a lot of people want that six pack. So training them for aesthetics and training them for function.
Yeah. I think that'd be a good place to start for the most part. I would say going for aesthetic would probably be the best one first, and then focusing more into the functionality, be a little bit more in depth with that one.
Yeah. So let's talk about aesthetics, and I guess touch on, we'll talk about building up your abs, and then we'll talk about bringing down body fat. So that way, you know, you can see them.
Okay. So my advice first off is that, when it comes to ab training, you have to treat your abs just like any other part of your body. You don't do legs every single day. You don't do arms every single day. You treat your abs as if you were training any other part of your body. So that means you shouldn't be doing ab day every single day. I know some people do it. There's different studies on it, but as a general note, just focus on having abs multiple times throughout the week, but give your body time to rest so that way you can recover, and then you can become stronger in order to move, improve in whatever goals, whether it's functionality or aesthetically as well.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people fall into that trap of training your abs kind of the same way that people try to train their calves, and where they lean more towards lower weight, a lot of reps. And we don't train the rest of the body like that. And like if we're just doing squats and we want, you know, our legs to get bigger, we're not going to train squats. We're not going to do five sets of 20 body squats and hope that our legs get bigger. If we want our legs to really grow, we want to add weight, you know, drop the volume and try to move as much of that weight with good form as possible. So I think a lot of times if you're looking at training your abs and the programming for your abs, I think you want to make sure that you're adding that high weight, low rep, I guess, range of training into it, as well as your more traditional style of ab training where you are doing more five sets of 20 or 50 or whatever it is.
Exactly. Especially because it really depends on this. Like, it's exactly what you said. Like, you have to make sure you're matching your training with your abs, with your legs, with your arms, with everything that you're doing. That way it matches whether you're in a certain phase of a style workout or whether you're doing different types of workouts. Like, it has to match what you're doing. So, like, a lot of people, especially I'm guilty of this, I do this a lot, is you do a lot of body weight exercises and you're over here benching like 300 pounds and squatting like 600 pounds or some stupid number like that. A lot of people tend to focus on abs as kind of like a secondary, kind of like a later, like, it's kind of like an unwanted child, but you still kind of keep taking care of it.
Wow.
It's a bad. I don't know why that came to mind, but that was the only thing I could think of.
I was going to say maybe that's cardio, where you don't structure a workout around it, but, you know, I might throw 20 minutes on the treadmill at the end.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, yeah, that's what I was going for, but I wanted an analogy that stuck. But, yeah, I go to dark places. But. Yeah, that's my analogy right there.
Just own it.
I'm gonna make a t-shirt out of it after like unwanted child. But anyway, that's the idea behind it. Like, a lot of people don't focus on it because either it's one, again, the aesthetics behind it. They don't really see the benefits of having a strong core to benefit their results. So, like, if you're doing aesthetically, it really depends on the style of the body you want. You want to make sure everything matches, especially if you're going for that aesthetic look. If you have really, like, if you think of a washboard, like, washboard's very, like, thin. It's very, like, it's not really defined. But if you want, like, kind of those deep cut abs, you have to build muscle in order to show the definition between the each individual square, I guess, if you think of it that way.
Yeah. And you also, I mean, to make it easier to see them and to make them more visible, you know, at a higher body fat, you want them to look like little bricks. So you need to build them up and build them stronger, not just, all right, let me backtrack that a little bit. Yes, you need to be lean, but in order to see them at, you know, a higher body fat, they also need to be built. So you need to build your abs up in order for them to be more visible and more defined.
Yeah, like I'll give a better analogy. If you can go back to like middle school where guys were showing off the abs in like the locker room, you can remember the skinny kid almost always had abs because, again, back then we all had very low body fats for the most part. So you could see almost everyone's abs in the locker room. But you could tell the difference between like that level of abdominal hypertrophy, because the muscles aren't exactly defined yet. That's just the bare minimum. So you can see the washboard abs, and then when you go, let's say, fast forward that kid 20 years later and he's lifting heavy, he's building up muscle, and now he's got, I don't know, Chris Hemsworth abs or like any like famous actor that works out a ton just to get that bodybuilder look, like that superhero body. You could tell the difference between those level of hypertrophy and the muscle definition between the two. So that's kind of like a good imagery if you could think of it that way.
Yeah. Let's talk about how you can drop your body fat. It's simple and it's been driven home, I think, since I've been into fitness. There's a lot of fads, you know, that come and go, but the one that sticks around is always energy in versus energy out. If you're eating more than you're burning, you're going to add body fat. It's just what your body does. It just stores the extra energy to be used down the road. And if you just keep putting in more energy than you're burning off, your body isn't going to shut that mechanism off. So you need to be taking in less than you're burning.
No, 100%.
Because that's going to, that's going to be tapping into that extra fuel that has been stored, and you'll start to drop body fat and make those abs easier to see.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'll be an episode that we'll do later on. We'll dive a little bit deeper into nutrition and the energy systems, and we'll touch on that probably after this muscle series.
Yeah, but one thing I don't want to add on to that is, even if you do exactly that, you will see results. They may not be great results, but you will see results in terms of weight dropped and body fat percentage to drop, but it will eventually plateau. Depends on when you're eating. Like, if you're eating an unbalanced diet, let's say you ate like cake every day, but you eat the same amount of calories but less calories than you normally eat, you will see eventually weight drop, but at some point that'll only go so far, because your body needs a balanced meal set and a balanced caloric intake. So if you're eating your macronutrients at the proper percentages and the proper amounts, then that's when you see the body fat really start to drop. So you got to make sure it's all a balance.
Yeah, don't eat cake all day for every meal. That's just a sure way to diabetes.
I mean, yes, that's happiness right there, personally. But yes, I agree.
I want to touch on obliques real quick too, because me coming from the bodybuilding world, a lot of people were worried about building up their obliques because they thought that it made their waistline bigger and it made them look more boxy. But if you have, I think one of the best looks is when you have those nice serratus muscles, like the, I guess,
right by the ribs.
Yeah. But like boxers muscles, or there's some kind of boxing punchers muscles.
I think I know what you're talking about.
But I'm trying to connect with everybody, but if you have those almost feather looking muscles that tie into nice cut obliques, that's what's going to give you a better taper look, you know, from shoulder down to waist. I think that is one of the best looks. I don't understand why people are so afraid to build up their obliques. I guess I shouldn't speak for everybody, because I'm speaking mostly for the bodybuilding world, but though that is, I think, such a good look and one of the most aesthetic things on the body.
Oh, yeah. And the nice thing about the obliques is they cut very well. If anyone knows what I'm talking about, the V-line, that's like right above the pant waistline. Like, if you can make your obliques really good, it cuts very nicely into the V-cut. So there's a little tip there.
I think the kids call that the sex V.
Yeah. Yeah. I know my little brother, he was like, when he was trying to lose weight, he was very obsessed with it. This is back when I was like low body fat. So he was very obsessed with it, and he kept asking me how to do it. And this is back when I was an athlete, so I didn't have to work all that hard for it. And now I kind of envy myself, because I haven't had it for a while. I kind of want it back.
Me too. I feel you there.
All right. So you want to head a little bit more into functionality now?
Yeah, let's touch on functionality and really what each muscle is designed to do.
Okay. So speaking from a simple point, we'll just go with general body movements to start off. So if you think the abdominis rectus, the six-pack abs, for those of you guys that don't know what that is, that one is mostly focusing on pulling your torso forward. So if you think of it as a sit-up, that's the muscle that's primarily working to bring your chest up into your knees. That's really focusing on stabilizing the core. Pretty much that's just the strength portion of your core. That's really the one that allows for the most movement and control of the core section.
Yeah, that's.
You disagree with that?
No. That's. I mean, that you look at the insertion points; they're right at the bottom of the rib cage, and then down at the front of your pelvis. So they're there to round your spine and bring your rib cage closer to your waistline. I mean, they have a lot of other functions. You know, keeping your spine upright, giving you good posture, which I guess we'll touch on that in a little bit. But that's their main job. Just like your bicep is, its main job is to bring your hand up towards your shoulder. You know, that's its job. That has two insertion points. when it contracts and gets shorter, it pulls your forearm up or your hand up towards your shoulder.
So then the next muscle group again probably be the obliques that focuses on the transverse movement. So from in simple terms, that's your rotational movement. So allowing you to turn your chest without moving the rest of your body. So it focuses on not only in the twisting motion, but it also stabilizes your spine in side to side movements as well. So like if you were to tilt your torso to the side, so like if you were to stand up, try to touch your toes by sliding your hand down your leg, that is your obliques allowing your body to not only tilt and turn to the side, but also stabilizing it so that way your spine doesn't collapse to the side either way. So it's focusing on not only a rotational movement, but also at stabilizing the spine as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you duck and move a little bit to the right or left, you know that there's obliques involved in that. And throwing is a lot of obliques. So these are all things that you want to look at and how you're training your core, that how that they're going to transition over to your dodgeball play. And not only just to strengthen them up, but if I look at my obliques and I know my left oblique is much more defined, developed than my right, because when I throw, I'm right-handed. When I throw, I'm twisting hard with my left oblique to bring, you know, my arm from behind me to forward and following through. So I want to make sure that I'm balanced. So that's where I do a lot of focus, and a lot of other dodgeballers. I know you guys are out there that don't look at it. So it's time to start digging into that and fixing some back pain.
Yeah. It's similar to, we talked about it before a couple times and briefly throughout episodes, is unilateral training. I know Brett, reading the thing now, I know Brett talks about unilateral training and balancing out your imbalances, because not only does that improve your performance, it also protects your body from possible injury. Because if you have imbalances, especially with the obliques, because they're working on the same, I guess the same bone movement. So like if you mentioned, like you said, they hit the right side stronger than your left, and you're doing a lot of that movement, your body has to be able to adapt to counteract that high intensity movement. And if you can't have both sides pulling the same amount of work, that's where injuries can happen, because all it takes is one time. And then that one time, especially with the back, can ruin your lifestyle very easily. So you got to make sure you build it up, especially when it comes to the spine, because the spine is no joke. That controls pretty much your entire body. If you think about it, like paralyzed people, like even if it's their lowest portion of their spine, they're paralyzed from the leg down. So that's something you got to really make sure you take care of the back, because that can easily mess you up.
Well, I think that's a good segue into how, you know, a lot of back pain is solved by strengthening up your core.
Oh yeah. I know as a personal trainer, that was I wouldn't say the biggest, but that was one of the biggest concerns for a lot of people, was they want to fix, first they want to lose weight. And then the second thing was, when it comes to not really rehabbing, but fixing any issues that they've had over the years, and back pain is usually one of the number one spots, because they have a weak core. They don't know how to fix their posture. They have terrible posture because of the way they work, or they're not moving around. It's a whole lot of issues that can be fixed with the core. So just focus on that.
I think, you know, if you assess, I'll just say 90% to be safe, 90% of, and I'll also say Americans, because I don't know, stats up there in Canada and New Zealand where all of our listeners are. If you look at them, a lot of people have that rounded shoulder that we talk about, or we have touched on in the past. And the next thing you look at is the anterior pelvic tilt. And a lot of that has to do with what we're doing all day, every day. A lot of us have desk jobs. A lot of us are sitting probably 8-10 hours a day. You know, we go to work, we sit, and then we come home, sit and watch TV, which, you know, I do not want anybody to subscribe to. When you come home, move. But if you look at what we do all day, that it causes impact on our body. And I'm going to include our hip flexors into our core. Oh, yeah. Because as you know, we'll touch on later, your hip flexors can take over for a lot of different ab exercises. And you might be able to do a lot of abs, but you're actually doing a lot of hip flexors. So, you know, when we sit all day, you know, we're sitting our legs forward, you know, at about a 90 degree from your waist. Those hip flexors over time they start to shorten because they're not being elongated by a lot of walking, a lot of running, or just in a full stretched position. So they become shorter and tighter, which will actually tilt your pelvis forward. And a lot of people try to fix this by stretching their hamstrings. And that's the exact opposite thing that you want to do.
I'm definitely guilty of that, but yeah.
So when it comes to like your posture and stuff, you want to look at that as a whole, and strengthening your core will help kind of pull your pelvis back up a little bit if there's you have strong, tight core muscles.
One thing I want to say is, especially for office workers, like if you haven't noticed before, that your body, the human body, is a very amazing tool because it's the most adaptable tool you could think of on the planet, really, because whatever position you put your body to over time, your body will become to adapt to whatever scenario you throw it at. So if you're an office worker and you're sitting down, like Brett said, doing your 9-to-5s every single day, your body will adapt to accommodate that position to the best of its ability. So like Brett mentioned, the forward slouching, the pelvic tilt of the hips, the lower back pain because you're slouching for the most part, because you're not standing up, your body isn't stimulated to return to its, I guess, default position, which is the standing position. So the new default becomes your chair position, which is the slouching, the pelvic tilt, and all that. So you have to make sure your body's being stimulated in as many ways as possible. So that way, the default position is always the default position, but it's able to adapt to any scenario, not having the default position move into a new default position that's not really beneficial for movement, for pump functionality, performance, anything. So you want to make sure your body can handle the stress that you put on it by putting stress on it in a productive way that allows you to move without any restrictions.
Yeah, it really is crazy when you take a poll of people you're training. And you just ask them, you know, if they talk about knee pain, they talk about back pain, whatever. And you just ask, well, why is that? And people don't even know. They're like, I don't know. It's just always been that way. Like, haven't you ever thought like to try to fix it? Or don't you want that to be better? Like, I'm glad you're here now, but if it's been this way for 10, 15 years, what were you doing? Like, oh, well, when I sit at my desk and it doesn't bother me, so I just forget about it. It's like, dude. That's not living optimally. That's just surviving.
Yeah, that's it. It's just living with the condition and ignoring the symptoms. So
yeah. Anyway, I want to touch on, because I am an office worker. Not currently, when I was in the office, you know, I saw everybody there. I could see how just sitting in these chairs had affected people all day. Now, I transitioned from a job where I was not sitting all day. You know, I was in a gym. I was training. I was walking gym floors, you know, I was helping train people. And then when I transitioned into this office job, I hated it. I'm a very, I don't know if antsy is the right word, but I'm always fidgeting with stuff. It might be a little bit of ADD or whatever, but I'm always moving and messing with stuff. So when I sit down, you know, I can't sit and focus for 8 hours straight. So I went and I got myself one of those adjustable, like stand up, sit down desks and plopped it on my desk. And everybody thought I was really weird. And just noticing that difference was huge. And then I went and got myself a chair, but it has an exercise ball for the seat. I don't know if you've seen those.
I think I have seen them. I think they're pretty cool.
It's got like a back to it and like a wheel base that the ball sits on. But so I use that as my chair when I'm not standing up, and people laugh at me when they walk by my desk, because once in a while I'll have my leg up on the chair and I'm standing at my desk and I'm stretching my hip flexor, and people look at me like, "The hell are you doing?"
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of like those comedy movies where like the gym teacher is like in short shorts and like it puts its foot up on the chair and stretches in front of the students. That's like the image I got of you, and I was like, dude,
that's me, but like in khakis and a polo.
Okay, fair. But at least you're professional.
Yeah, but just adding like those small changes is huge. One, sitting on a ball, I advocate so much for sitting on a ball. I love it. It'll help strengthen up your back and your core so much better than just sitting in a chair where you don't have to, all those ergonomic chairs where you don't have to flex or hold any muscles tight is outrageous. Get rid of them. Sit on a ball, wiggle around, and engage your core.
Oh yeah, definitely. You're constantly engaged, and that's one thing I like about exercise balls, because even if you like, I've never worked an office job, so I don't know if you can ever do this, but like even if you ever get bored for like 5 minutes, you can like just try to sit on the ball, lift your feet up, and see how long you can balance on it. And that's just one, fun to me. Two,
all the time.
It's a great way to engage your core. But like if you are on the exercise ball again, you're always flexing something, versus when you're on an office chair, you're relaxed like almost 100% of the time. At worst, like you'll be leaning forward and your back is engaged, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when you do that for extended periods of time, that's when it gets bad.
When you're rounding your shoulders forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. My manager is nervous for me all the time, because I'll like put my knees on top of the ball and like sit on heels on top of the ball and try to balance. And he is so worried that we're going to get some kind of health violation because I'm just playing around on my ball chair or whatever.
You can't help be like a child on them. It's nice.
I can't. It's just in me. But anyway, let's get back to some ab exercises.
All right, fine. Sounds like a deal.
So let's talk about some of our favorite ab exercises for both aesthetics and function. We'll do abs, obliques, and then I think there's one or two really good transverse ones, and we'll see if you agree with those ones. So do you want to let's start with our abs, and then we'll move to obliques. So want to start us off?
Okay. So for it, let's see. I'm trying to think of the best ones. It really depends on what goals you're on, but I'm going to go with just kind of a general exercise. My favorite one is probably hanging leg raises. So what you would do is you go to a pull-up bar, grab on the pull-up bar, and what you would do is while locking down your core, you're going to lift up your feet in a straight, your legs in a straight leg position, and lift your feet up in front of you. So it's kind of like a leg lift, but if you can add a med ball to it or even a dumbbell, it kills your core, and not only your core, your hip flexors as well. So they're great ways to activate pretty much all of your core in a effective way, and then it's kind of a nice combo because it works your grip strength as well.
Yeah, so. I'm glad you touched on the hip flexors in this one in particular. There's another one that I think is a big culprit for your hip flexors, but this one, if you are just bringing your knees up, you're not doing any kind of abdominal lifts there. You're just using all hip flexors and you're bending at your hips. Yep. What you want to do is you want to round at your lumbar spine, so your lower spine, and try to point your tailbone as far down, or point it down to the ground as much as you can. So you rotate your pelvis forward, then try to bring your legs up, and I guarantee you that you can't do half of what you were just doing.
Exactly. Like my recommendation to people, if they ever try it, is try to get your knees up as high as you can. So like try to get your knees to try to touch your chest. Or another, not really advanced, but like if you're really strong, flexible, try to get your knees up to your elbow or even touch the bar if possible. Because, yeah, I used to do pole vault and I had this, So like people don't understand, realize about pole vault is that's almost 100% core. And when I tried it out for the first time, I was like, it can't be that bad. And before I was even allowed to touch a pole, my pole vault coach, who was like an ex-military trainer, he made us do like 2 months of core workouts, And most of it was always on a bar. And he would make us do those where your knees would go all the way up to the bar. And I would cry after like every three because it's like the most brutal way of working your core. But I promise you, your abs would not get any better after doing those. So it's
yeah, great that's workout. Those were heavy in my routine when I was training for shows. Those, I think, built up my abs as far as a body weight exercise. I think those built up my abs and cut my abs up the best. But I would also say, I love doing like exercise ball or BOSU ball sit-ups as well. And the thing I like about these the most is that they don't really leave a lot of room for error, especially if you're on a BOSU ball, which is like one of those exercise balls that's cut in half and has like a flat like plastic part to the ball. You lay that on the ground and then put the ball right into your lumbar spine and try to just, as much as you can, try to go one vertebra at a time and just curl your spine up so that way you can bring your chest up to your knees. Those get my abs burning so fast. I can never do more than 10 of those in a set. They hurt so bad because I'm using a full range of motion, because when I bend back around that ball, I'm getting a full extension and then coming all the way up with really good form to a hold, squeezing. And I think those will light your abs up. One, two, they'll let you feel what it is for like an ab isolation exercise.
Wait, quick question. I'm trying to picture it because I think I know what you're talking about. Are you sitting on your butt and the BOSU with the ball side up pressed against your lower back, or are you on your back with your butt on top of the BOSU, kind of?
So I have the BOSU plastic side down on the ground. Okay. So the ball is up, and then I place my back, like my lumbar spine, right on top of the ball. So my butt is actually off the ball.
Okay.
My like when you curl up, your tailbone will sink into it a little bit.
Okay.
But you want it right in that bottom curve of your spine. So that way you get full flexion around the ball. And then when you come up, you can use that full range of motion to pull your ribs all the way from a full extension to a full contraction.
Gotcha. Okay. I can
those
see
are those are one of my favorites.
Yeah, I could definitely
if see you that one. If you don't try those ones, give them a shot.
I will definitely try it when my gym opens up so I can get a BOSU.
or try them on a regular exercise ball. I just bought one. I bought two of them on Amazon that just got here 2 days ago. They were like $16 a pop.
Oh, nice.
And they are my favorite ab exercise, and I had done, I think, 3 sets of 10 for the last 2 nights, and my abs are still sore.
One thing I would recommend, especially if you're a fan of Roman chairs, that's what I've been calling it, but I don't actually know what they're called, is when you're like kind of propped up on your elbows and have your back up against the mat and you lift up your knees. You know what those are called? That machine?
Wait, you're on a machine?
So like you're up on your elbows. Yeah, so, or like a, not really a machine, but more like a, I guess it's a machine because I can't think of what it's called. But like you grab a pole, your elbows are propped up on a mat, and you're your back is pressed up against the mat as well, and you're pretty much hanging off the ground, and you lift up your knees.
I think it's just a variation of hanging leg raises, isn't it? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically a variation. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, but I don't know what the actual device is called. So at my old job, we called it roaming chairs. We didn't know what to call them.
Yeah, it's just a variation where you're not hanging. You're able to prop yourself up by your elbows.
Yeah, so my disclaimer with that, because I know it's usually a pretty popular machine, if you're doing the knee raises for that one, that's almost all 100%. Hip flexors, and I was never a very big supporter of that machine because it focuses on the hip flexors and not so much your core. So you got to make sure you're really careful about using that one, because I know a lot of people can't really hold themselves up with the hanging leg version, so they do that modification, and it's not always going to work well, especially if you don't know how to properly execute the core aspect of it.
The last one I want to touch on, and then if you have more, we can go into them. This is more a full, like, core is planks. And I think planks are a great exercise. And I brought this up because I saw in Dodgeball Fit to Win people posting about how long they can hold planks for. And I want to know if people are holding planks with good form or if they're being suspended by their hip flexors.
I'm speaking for those that can hold it for like at least 3 minutes or more. I feel like if you're holding it with bad form, you're going to be in pain that whole time. So the pain alone will drop.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like if you're able to hold it past like, I'll say 2 or 3 minutes, you probably have good form because there's no way you'd survive after that. So,
well, it's just like anything else. If you start small and you keep building up, you could just have super strong hip flexors, just like if we were doing it right with core, eventually you would get better and better at it. I like to do what a lot of people call active planks. You know what I'm talking about?
I want to say yes, but go on.
So when I'm planking, I have my butt up in the air a little bit, and everybody gets upset about it, but hear me out. So what I like to do is I have my butt up in the air a little bit just to make sure that my hip flexors aren't in the equation at all. And then I try as hard as I can to pull my elbows and toes together. So I'm squeezing with my abs, almost just trying to crunch. So that way I'm trying to bring my elbows to my toes the entire time. And I cannot hold those for long. I have to do, I get more like pulses. So where I hold that for 30 seconds, then I can relax and then hold again for 30 seconds. So if you actively are trying to do that, I think it engages your core, your abs a lot more than your hip flexors. And it also, that squeezing will give you a better result.
I feel that, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I feel that works more upper body. And like, I feel like it's more of a whole body. Like, I'm not sure how to explain my thought process on that. Like, I agree with you, what you're saying, but I feel like it activates way more muscles than you need to, or activates muscles in a different way that's not needed, because it's almost like you're doing a negative exercise, which is different than a plank itself, if that makes sense. So like,
yeah, I guess, yeah, I guess I'm not actively trying to pull my elbows. It's just more of a external cue. Yeah.
Like I knew
is what I'm going for.
Yeah. I knew. What okay. You meant. I just was trying to think of a way to explain that for other people's sake. Cause I know like when I do planks, I'm not actively trying to pull anything down. And I know, I know just holding it itself is a struggle in and of itself. So I know I tend to just focus on keeping the angle of my pelvis from rotating any further. So that way my lower back isn't in play at any point. So I may or may not be activating my hip flexors more than I should, but I feel like if you focus more on keeping certain positions in the right places, you're activating all the muscles you need without any of the drawback. Cause I know a lot of people, especially cause like, for example, I worked on my mom this morning and she did planks, and this is the first time she's ever done planks in like ever. And the first thing that happened was her lower back dipped, forcing her pelvis tilt forward, and that was the hardest part for her to understand that she couldn't do that, because that's instantly what's causing the back pain. So just teaching people how to learn how their body works and what they should be feeling and how to resist those movements when they come. So
yeah, and that's what I'm trying to resist there with that active is just like in the leg raises, I'm trying to point my tailbone down to the ground. So I'm doing a little bit more rounding, but I'm doing it in the correct direction, not letting my back dip, but actually rounding a little bit forward.
Yeah. Like I had someone, I don't know who told me, but I know someone that explained it to me in the best way. It's not a great analogy, but a great imagery is if you start off on your hands and knees and you're in like a table position. If you do a cat arching movement where you arch your back as high up as you can and then do a back dipping movement, that'll show some people what they would be feeling if they're doing it correct versus doing it incorrect. So the correct way to do it is kind of arch your back. And what happens when you arch your back, your pelvis will tilt forward, backwards. I can never remember. But I think your pelvis will at least tilt in the right direction. And that's what you want your pelvis to do in a plank position. But if you're doing the opposite and letting your your spine dip, your pelvis will tilt in a negative way. And that's where if you do a plank, you'll feel that instantly in your lower back. You might even feel that in your stomach because your core is not activated at all or not activated in the correct way. So you got to make sure that if you focus on arching the back in the plank, it'll allow yourself to set yourself up for success versus failure.
Yeah, that's the old cat-cow warm-ups. Shout out to Christine. I hope she's giving me some bonus points for that yoga reference.
Yeah. It's called a cat-cow. I could have sworn it was cat-dog or a bird-dog. I don't know what it's called. I know so many different names because of my work.
Yeah, the I think bird-dog is definitely something I've heard before, but I think that's more up on your toes. I don't know. We'll get with Christine and see what she has to say.
So I guess with that moves us on to obliques then, right? Unless you got anything else to say.
Yeah, what do you got for obliques?
Okay. I'm going to let you start off because I don't know where I was going to go with it first. So go ahead, go.
All right. Well, one of my favorite for obliques is this directly is because of, I guess, directly translates into dodgeball, is a banded twist. And you could do the uppercuts or the chops or just lateral twists, however you want to look at it. But when I do these in my garage with a band, I do them with a band or in a gym with a pulley system. These I feel will translate over to dodgeball the best for your obliques. A lot of the twisting, you know, it translates for your throwing and the follow through and the deceleration, the acceleration of your arm and blah, blah, blah. But when I have a band, I attach it to something solid. I step away from that solid and I hold the end of the band straight out from my chest in both hands and make sure I have a solid base and I twist nothing but my chest. And that way I fire the one side of my obliques when I twist back and then the other side to resist the band wanting to snap back. So I think those are my favorite for dodgeball. You know, I do probably 4 to 5 sets each side, make sure that I'm holding good form. And what I like to do is I like to start with my right oblique and I do, you know, 10 to 15, as many as I can. But then when I switch over to my left side, because I know my left side is more dominant because I throw with my right hand, I don't do any more on my left side than I did for my right side. So we could work on that unilateral trading that we talked about. So my right side can start to catch up a little bit.
Yeah. One thing that most people with obliques that most people don't know is that your obliques actually work an opposite. So like if you're working on a twisting motion, let's say if you're a right-handed thrower, your left side is going to be doing nearly 100% of the work. Your right side is only going to be trying to decelerate the motion. So when it comes to turn of you throwing right-handed, your left side is going to be usually stronger than your right side when it comes to movement. So that's one thing most people don't know about obliques.
Yeah, because if you look at where the inserts are, you know, your oblique on your left side connects to the bottom of your rib cage and your left hip. So I'm moving around while I'm doing this. So if I get away from the mic, just say, idiot, come back to your microphone. So if I reach back as far as I can with my right hand, and then I try to pull through like I'm throwing a dodgeball and I twist and then feel your left side, that's where you're going to feel more engaged because that's what's pulling to twist you. And then just the opposite for your right side, it's going to be really weird to pretend to throw left-handed because I know it is for me, but that's how you can feel that muscle is what's contracting on your opposite side.
And then going back to the exercise that you picked, my exercise is almost identical. It's just a different way of doing it. Cause I'm also a very big fan of the banded or the pulley system, oblique twists. But my exercise is actually med ball, throws in a transverse movement. So if you have a wall or a med ball throwing wall that you could throw a med ball at, you're going to stand to, so the wall will be on your left. Let's say I'm throwing it with my right side. The wall will be to your left and you're going to be standing in a, not a wide stance, but slightly wider than your shoulder width. And what you're going to do is you're going to take that med ball and you're going to throw it across the body into the wall. And that ball will bounce back and you're going to catch it and then repeat going back to the starting position and throw it as hard as you can. And the goal for that is to produce powerful movements in the range of motion that you're going through. So it's designed to simulate a, not exactly a throw, but the movements that your body would go through in a throw. Okay, so taking out the shoulder movement of it is the twisting motion that you're trying to replicate of a dodgeball throw. So taking that ball from your hip level and then throwing it across the body, that's the goal that we're looking for that throw. So it's a met ball wall toss.
Yeah, it's just same basic movement. It's just more explosive and focuses more on exploding through one side and doesn't quite have the deceleration on the other side. But same principles apply, you know, do your weaker side first, do as many as you can with your weaker side, and then do the same thing with your stronger side. Yeah, I mean, I think those are two great oblique exercises. I mean, you could do side planks, which just like your regular planks, you're just up on your one elbow and your other arm, you know, you point towards the ceiling, and those are great for stabilizing. Let's talk about your transverse abdominals. I really know of one, I should say it's one basic movement, but you can do it in a lot of variations.
I know one movement, or it's not really a movement, more of a lack of movement. Actually, it's an isometric hold.
Yeah.
That typically most people are familiar with. So I'll let you go because you're even more interesting.
Oh, I was just, the only thing I have is for your transverse is doing vacuums. Is that what you were going to bring up?
I don't even know what a vacuum is, so tell me more.
Oh, so a vacuum is, if you ever look at like any, I guess, Arnold pose, how he has his stomach sucked in and you can see like almost under his rib cage, that is his transverse abdominals that are bringing in his entire core basically to make it look like he has a thinner waist, to make his shoulders and lats and everything look a lot wider. So the vacuum that he's doing is sucking his belly button through his spine is what it feels like. And you can start this many different ways, and this will help with a lot of people that have that, I guess, pooch at the bottom of their belly. That's because your TVA has atrophied a little bit and your weight belt isn't as tight as it should be. So once you start working that, you know, holding it, maybe, man, it's difficult at first. So you might want to do it just laying down on your back and try to suck your belly button through your spine and hold it for maybe 10 seconds, maybe do it for like 5 rounds, and you'll start to feel it. And once you start to develop that connection, you know, you can start to do it standing. And you want to make sure you can breathe through it the whole time, because a lot of times if you try it right now, just try to suck in your belly, like it's hard to do both holding that in and breathing at the same time. So it's really a skill you kind of have to develop, and that will tighten that weight belt and make sure that your back and everything in you, basically all your organs and stuff, are secure and safe.
That's a new one I've never heard of. I mean, it's probably a bodybuilding trick more than anything else. So
yeah, I think it is. I mean, it is a bodybuilding trick, but I think it's starting to get a little bit more mainstream.
Okay. So yeah. I'll have to do a little bit more research on it, because not that I'm like denying it, but I wouldn't see that in any conventional training.
Oh no, you're not going to find it in any kind of, you know, if you look up some kind of trendy ab exercise, you're not going to find it in there. But if you want to take off inches on your waist quickly, just tightening up those muscles will draw your waist in real quick.
Agreed. Yeah. So like my ab exercise is less tricky, I guess. It's more of just it's kind of like a plank. I call it like a reverse plank, if anything. So what this one is, it's called a dead bug. Most of you guys may know of it. So what you would do is you lay on your back and you try to get your feet to roughly a 45 degree angle with your body and in the air. And you're basically just holding that position with your legs straight as possible. And what that does, it forces your transverse abdominals to work in an isometric hold. And for most people, it's a very, very painful lack of movement because you're basically fighting against gravity, against a muscle group that's not designed to fight against gravity. So like a plank where it's you're holding yourself up, it's a I call it a reverse plank because you're only holding your legs up versus your whole body. And it's a very painful movement from not only personal experience, but from client feedback that I make people do every once in a while. They hate me because of it, because it's not a fun exercise.
I've never heard of this. I'm Googling it right now.
Really? Dead bugs are like the most basic exercise ever. I mean, you probably know it as a different, like a probably a leg raise. And instead of doing like multiple leg raises, you're just holding it. Or like you hold your feet up like 6 inches off the ground. That's another version of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just, yeah, a leg raise. Okay.
Yeah, that's like another way of calling it. Yeah. So basically, yeah, leg raise is a dead bug. It's just a different name. There's like again, in fitness, there's different names for different exercises, so it confuses everybody.
Yeah, nothing can be easy.
Exactly. But another exercise that I've got that's similar to a dead bug is a V sit or a bowl sit. So V sits are a little bit more common where you're sitting on your butt, your legs are straight, and your chest is straight, and you're trying to make a V with your body. With the angle you're doing, that one's a little bit more common. Bowl sit is something I call it because I don't know what it's called. It's a little bit of a wider angle of a V sit where your chest and your legs are a little bit further apart. So what you're doing is you're still on your butt, but your feet are almost like about a foot off the ground, and your lower back, your shoulders are off the ground, and your lower back is still off the ground. And what you're doing is you're trying to hold basically the V sit at the widest possible angle you can do. And that's a very rough exercise. I can only hold it for about 20 seconds before wanting to give up because you're so exposed, but you're still holding everything up off the ground. So you're fighting gravity with a very small muscle group. So it's a fun but painful exercise.
Yeah, it's definitely something you want to work up to. Yeah. That's all I have to for covering abs. I don't know if you want to throw in any nuggets real quick.
I'm trying to think of stuff, but I don't have any. Unless you want to work out, an ab workout with me, that's all I've got.
Well, spoiler alert, we might be having one of those coming soon. Was there any questions on Facebook?
Nope, there are no Facebook questions.
All right, I had a couple on Instagram. All right, I had one from Hunter Ford. What's up, Hunter? He asked, is there a best time of the day to train abs? What are your thoughts on that?
It's really like any other body part. There's really no best time. It's really just depends on your schedule. Like it's the same thing as like you're doing a light day. There's really no best time to do it. You'll find studies that say when the best time to do it, like before eating, after eating, when you wake up, when you go to sleep. But it's really just based on what you know is best for your body. So you know you're more productive in terms of working out in the morning, do it in the morning. If you're better in the afternoon or night, do it then. So it's just do it when you can, when it's best for you.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't say there is a best time for abs specifically. It's just do them when you can. I mean, if you're in your office, you know, if you're in an office all day working, try to just throughout the day, maybe every hour on the hour, try to just sit up in your chair, make sure you're holding your posture, and just brace your core for a minute, 2 minutes, whatever. And you'll start to feel that it is starting to do something. And then if you can work out, you know, in your lunch hour, right when you get home from work, right when you wake up in the morning, do a quick little ab circuit, the more the better. Abs are something that we're supposed to be using all the time. So if you are training, like we talked about in the beginning, if you're doing a lot of body weight stuff, you know, things that you'd be doing on a normal day anyway, make sure that, you know, you're giving yourself time to recover. But if you're going to the gym and doing a little bit like heavier cable crunches or doing a lot of heavier resistance stuff, then again, time during the day doesn't matter, but make sure you're giving yourself enough time throughout the week to recover.
Yeah. One thing I will add is if you are kind of like me where you typically don't do abs alone, you typically do it with another body part. So let's say you do leg day and then do abs. it really, I would say it depends on how much abs you're trying to do. If you try to do like a little bit of abs, I would say that'd be a great way to warm up. But if you're kind of looking for like a heavy, like heavy load ab day, I would say always do it after your workouts versus going before, because depending on what you're doing for that day, you're, I wouldn't say sore or loose, but like your abs are fatigued at that point. So they may affect your performance depending on what you're working on. So like if you're, for example, working on a speed and agility day, wouldn't recommend doing abs beforehand. But if you're doing like a leg day and it really doesn't impact your legs, do them before, do them after, your choice. So it kind of depends. There's a little timing, it might be a little bit more impactful, but usually not really.
I would still even say if you're doing abs before your leg day, I wouldn't recommend it, especially if you're doing a squat day and you're working with, I guess if you're working with a squat belt, which is a whole nother topic, but you want to make sure that your core isn't fatigued at all, you know, and you can brace your core so that you can protect your spine while you're doing squats.
So like I said, like it could be a warm up if it's light, but if it's a full ab day, do it after for sure.
Yeah. And then we have another question from Zach at @dodgeball_and_deadlifts. He asks, what are your favorite exercises for rotational power development or your explosiveness?
I mean,
which I feel we kind of touched on with the wall balls. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really the only explosive movement you can do aside from. That's really about it, actually. Unless you have like a one of those. I know I saw Andrew Ketchum doing a video of it where like he had a cable machine, but it's like a really high tech one where like you could go explosive as you want, and then like it slowed down on the way back. Like it's really interesting, but you have to have the right machine to do that. So that's not exactly a good.
I like if you can do like the ball tosses. If you have a friend that you can play like catch with, and then you know you have that explosiveness to throw it to the next person, and then they do it on their side and then rotate that way. Yeah. When you catch the ball, you're working on that deceleration as well. Those are one of my favorites. If you have a training partner, highly recommend.
Yeah. Ooh, I got another one. This is more for like the CrossFit people, or if you have access to either one of these, tire slams. If you have like a sledgehammer and then you can slam it on a tire, or if you're more of a lumberjack, you could take an axe and chop wood, but that's a little bit more dangerous, so wouldn't recommend that one. So we got any other questions?
That was it. That was all I have from Instagram, and then if we got nothing from Facebook, we're good.
Cool. All right.
I guess, do you want to drop what will be coming hopefully next week?
So we are, I guess we could drop this now. We as Ball Out have been trying to figure out how to help you guys with their training. So we have decided to purchase bulk order of bands, resistance bands. We only have one size right at the moment, but as we grow as a company, we'll definitely be looking to get different sizes. We're definitely looking to build up. I don't even know what I'm saying, but we have bands.
Yeah, we, especially right now, I know a lot of people are working out from home, and even when things start to become lifted, which hopefully is soon, we want to have something that, you know, you guys can feel good about using. And if you like us, hopefully you want to support us, and hopefully you want the podcast to keep growing. I know we do. So it's just a light band. Hopefully, you know, you can use it in your workouts, but also the real driving force behind it was to have something in the gym that, you know, you could loop around a bleacher or a post or something to help out when we have those breaks to, you know, get a little extra shoulder mobility work in, to prime your shoulder a little bit before you start throwing, and something that's easy to bring around in a bag and, you know, get that quick warm up in. You know, that's what we're all about here. Ball Out is doing things the right way and making sure that you guys can perform at your best. So we thought that a band would be the best thing to start off with for you guys. And those will get posted up on the website as soon as we receive them. Hopefully they're in here next week. They are sweet. I can't wait to post them and get those out to you guys. So you can look forward to some kind of dodgeball. I'm sure we'll do some videos and stuff with them too, to show you how else you can use them in your everyday training outside of just in the actual gym.
Exactly. And I know we'll definitely toss out a survey to see what other products you guys would love to see from us. As we grow, we'll definitely try to expand our product line. So that way we're not just selling bands. We can sell whatever you guys would want to utilize from us. So we're definitely open to options. We're going to probably make a survey, hopefully the next few weeks, just to see what you guys would be interested in getting and how we can support you guys as our wonderful audience.
Yeah. And if you guys have any ideas, feel free to reach out to us. You know, if you would like to see some kind of product that we can bring to a gym and have on a table just in case somebody forgets something, you know, let us know. We'll see what we can do. Again, this podcast was created to help you guys out, and all we want to do is help the sport grow and everybody get better. But with that, make sure you're following us on everything. Twitter at Ball Out Pod. If you haven't started following us yet, go follow us. I think we have like 3 tweets now. Follow us on Instagram at Ball Out Dodgeball. Follow us on Facebook, Ball Out Dodgeball. Make sure that you are subscribed to our newsletter that's going to be coming out soon. Keep you up to date on everything we have going on and, you know, possibly new products that are coming out. So make sure you are subscribed to that newsletter and make sure that you are subscribed to this podcast so that every Thursday you get a notification letting you know that there's a new episode up so that you can come hang out with us for an hour or so. But that's all I have, Miles, unless you have anything.
No, I got one thing. Make sure on Facebook, you guys make sure you put our settings as first on the timeline so that way you never, ever, ever miss a post from us. Because I know you could definitely do that setting on Facebook. Instagram and Twitter, I don't know if you could do that. But at least for Facebook, edit your settings so that way you can see us every time we post. And either that or follow us, that way you get notifications every time we make a post, so that way you are up to date on any exciting news we have, because in the next few weeks we are looking to have lots of new news, so be ready for that.
Yes, you don't want to miss anything. And if you guys have any questions, you want to make sure that you're seeing those before we record. Shout out to Becca threw up a question for Lisa like 2 days after we recorded. Sorry about that, Becca, but I hope you get your question answered anyway. But I'm good. Miles, you good?
I'm good.
Then we out.
Peace out, guys.